So, Casey, how have things been going since our last appointment?
Things have been good. I guess I don't know. The big news is that this project I made has been really unexpectedly getting a lot of attention. Really blowing up. I mean, it's still really niche. It's like within a relatively small sphere of the internet, but it's like kind of my part of the internet. And it's just it's totally surprising. Like I mean, I've been working on this for like I've been working on this for like a year, I've been telling everybody, I've been talking about it a lot to everybody who had kind of listened, but it hasn't really gotten like attention aside from my friends knowing about it and some like really early people knowing about it. Now it's kind of like, I mean, it's not getting like mainstream attention, but it's like mainstream within this sphere, like the yeah sort of. So it's just been crazy. It's been super hectic. It's been great. I mean, the response has been terrific. There's, I mean, people are already using it. I don't know, did I tell you that it's like sort of, oh sorry, it's like it's this thing where you can like basically like create these digital artifacts, right? You can take arbitrary content and then you can put it into a Bitcoin transaction, and then that content turns into something that can be held, something that can be traded, like a digital artifact. It can be lost to fees. It can be recovered. It can float around and sort of flotsam and jetsam in the normal like Bitcoin monetary supply until somebody recovers it. And so the seeing people use it has been really great. I mean, like the art and the memes and all that has just been incredible. I'm so thankful to everybody who is using it. I mean, that's been great. It's been a big adjustment, before I could just kind of like every day I could kind of deal with everything that I needed to deal with, but now I really have to internalize that like I can't like every I can't deal with every single notification. I just like I want to, but I can't. There's no way that I can do that, and I have things that I want to do that are like really important. Like I want to, the tools are really hard to use. Basically, I mean, want to support users, and that's something that like I can do best. And so trying to juggle everything has just been crazy. But I mean, yeah, I mean, like my friends have been amazing. So yeah, it's been a good week. It's been a really crazy week, but it's been a great week.
How's the feedback been in terms of good things, bad things? How are you feeling about things?
Yeah, I mean, feedback has been, mixed. Lots of people are really excited about it. Actually, no, it hasn't been mixed. Feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. It uses Bitcoin, which is a shared global public resource. And that means that, it's not something that's just on some website that is, really limited to that website. It's a shared resource. And so anytime you use a shared resource, people have concerns about how you use that resource. And so a lot of the feedback has been concerns about how that resource is being used. Is this, will it make it harder to use Bitcoin or more expensive to use Bitcoin? And one nice thing, I've been trying to like sort of give my thoughts on the subject as I can. But it's been really nice to see the conversation essentially evolving, and people are, I think, realizing that some of their initial knee-jerk reactions may not, those concerns may not actually be things that we have to worry about. And I've seen some people just do an amazing job of explaining how things work, and sort of as they dig into it, a lot of Bitcoiners are like purists about Bitcoin, but in a lot of ways, this is a system designed by a Bitcoin purist. It fits very nicely into Bitcoin. It integrates very nicely with Bitcoin. And I designed it in the least resource-intensive way possible and in the most Bitcoin-y way possible. And I really invite people to dig into the details, especially if they are concerned, if they have concerns, to dig into the details and discover that Bitcoininess at the heart of this initially quite strange thing that doesn't feel like it's meant for Bitcoin or part of Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the discourse evolve because obviously I've been hearing you talk about this for months. I mean, the whole time I've known you.
Yep.
And I think longer than that, how long have you been working on Ordinals?
I don't know if it was, I know at least early 2022, I can sort of go back into the Git history and see the early commits. So I know at least early 2022. I don't know when I really started noodling on it in earnest. But yeah, around then, late 2021, early 2022.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a long time. And I think it's interesting to see the responses and seeing people sort of work through it and understand it. Because I've seen that happen a lot in person. But obviously, in terms of like online discourse, I don't know. It's fascinating, too, just from like a... Like a lot of times you see some like big thing pop up and you are an outsider to the discourse and it's very weird to be on the inside of the discourse and see that process and be like, wow, like I guess everything that I ever see that's like a point of discourse online likely has a story that I know fucking nothing about and like would take me a long time to learn and understand that is sort of, I don't know, it's just a very bizarre thing to witness. Having thought about it for so long and talked about it for so long.
I'm having exactly the same experience. These are things that I thought about. I thought like, okay, what happens when this happens? What happens when this happens? Does this have a negative effect on Bitcoin's fee market? Does this hurt sync time? Will this be essentially bad for Bitcoin? And I didn't think through these things very quickly either. Like this stuff took me months to think about and design. And everybody else is like going through that same process and will get to different parts, different places as they figure it out. And I think probably every discourse, especially technical discourses, are kind of like that, where you sort of see maybe other discourses too. I think you're right. It's like everything. Like if you've really thought about it, you know where the conversation is going to go before it goes. I think the person who I saw go through, so I think really the best Bitcoin developers see this and they like it or they don't like it. They think it's fun or not fun or interesting or not interesting. But in terms of the impact on the network, they and what can be quote unquote done about it, they go through the thoughts, the series of thoughts very quickly. Andrew Polstra, who I respect deeply on the Bitcoin mailing list, when somebody posted about inscriptions clogging the blockchain, and I encourage people not to post to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list. I think, well, I mean, if they want to, you know, whatever. It's a free blockchain. But like, you know, the inscriptions is largely orthogonal to serious Bitcoin development. So somebody posted about inscriptions being very large to Bitcoin Dev, and Andrew Polstra responded, basically like, going through the steps. This is fine. This doesn't impact the network. He has some concerns about the Bitcoin fee market essentially being tied up with, you know, NFT pump and dumps. But he kind of came to the conclusion that like, listen, there's no way to prevent this stuff. And he put out some ways that you could maybe try to prevent it. And he played through all the game theory very quickly. And he came to the conclusion that the only winning move is not to play. And I believe that that is the case if you don't like inscriptions. One is that I think that inscriptions are not harmful, and I think that they're beneficial for Bitcoin. I think the additional fees are going to be good. Smoothing out demand for block space is going to be good. Essentially, for a lot of tricky technical reasons, you can't really prevent inscriptions from happening. The things that people have been saying that maybe you could do to prevent inscriptions would make Bitcoin worse for its non-financial use cases. It would, you know, if you try to look at, you know, scripts and try to see if they're trying to stick some funny stuff in there, some arbitrary data, then that means that those arbitrary data stuffers are going to start getting more creative about how they stuff the data in there. And then that means that if those rules about what constitutes arbitrary data are very subtle, then non-arbitrary data stuffers who are making transactions will have to take those rules into account when they make transactions. And they will have to be very careful that they don't run afoul of those rules. Bitcoin is a system that you don't want to add any complexity to. And anything where you tried to censor, tried to determine what was like valid arbitrary data and what was invalid arbitrary data, or what was arbitrary data and what was, you know, protocol data, or quote unquote legitimate data. First of all, I think it's impossible to judge that. And second, you just make Bitcoin more complicated and worse. And it's just it's fraught. Making Bitcoin work is already very hard. And those things are just add unnecessary trickiness to no good end. And everybody who wants to advance the Bitcoin protocol should be trying to make it better. That making Bitcoin better for financial use cases is a great way to price frivolous inscriptions off of the blockchain. So it is a natural defense to inscriptions. I think inscriptions are valuable. I think it's really interesting that people like art and culture are incredibly human and incredibly ancient, and people love them. And trading and collecting culture and art objects and buying and selling them is also ancient, incredibly ancient, as ancient as money. Given that humans have had art and culture objects for any sort of archaeological record, it seems to me that they've probably been buying and selling them as long as money has existed, because art and culture predate money. So I think looking at this and sort of being like, this is a flash in the pan is a little weird. It's like, well, is art and culture a flash in the pan? So I
think it's partially like a bias against the art and culture of your time, in the sense that, like, I don't know, you can look back at very old art. I mean, I just think like pre-Renaissance art, where like everything looked like shit and the proportions made no sense.
Those weird horses that you see in medieval manuscripts where they're like, bro, has this dude seen a horse?
Exactly. Like, I feel
Shout out Weird Medieval Guys on Twitter. Follow that account for more misshapen horses. Please.
I feel like that and like the like monkey JPEGs are like kind of a similar vibe.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, a lot those of Bitcoins are treasured want to works.
Returvin. You know, they want to returvin to...
Yeah. Well, I think it's a natural sort of like, I don't know, I think maybe we talked about this on the episode that we deleted, but the like inclination to resent progress and resent the time that you're in while still having no choice but to push forward with it, I feel like it just seems like an innate human condition, where it's like, I don't know, could there be anything like something so beautiful or revolutionary or crazy produced on an inscription that would make people that are against ordinal inscriptions see the value in that? Like, I don't know, you know, maybe it's just the nature of people to sort of find art and culture to be frivolous unless it's in retrospect, you know?
Well, so I think one thing that will happen is that, inscriptions are going to be around until the heat death of the universe. Mm-hmm. They're in the time chain. And so that means that in 10 years, inscriptions will be 10 years old. The first inscriptions will be 10 years old. In 20 years, the first inscriptions will be 20 years old. In 50 years, they'll be 50 years old. They will begin to enter that. They will begin to accrue that legacy that will allow them to enter this realm that people reserve for things that are very old. And mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of time. And I love... Also, let me be clear, I love the inscriptions. I love the inscriptions that we're seeing. And they're only going to get better as people figure out the medium, essentially. I truly believe that that inscriptions are a new digital medium, especially as we add features, in particular, the ability to do multi-file inscriptions, where you can have... inscriptions that reference other inscriptions, essentially recursive inscription content. This is an incredibly exciting, interesting medium that will create essentially a commons of content that people can remix, and where your creativity is, how well you're rewarded is determined by how creative you are. Your ability to do something new and interesting is what will get you attention and will get you rewarded. And so I think that there is going to be an amazing continued evolution in inscriptions, which I already love. There's already a lot of creative stuff. I've already seen inscriptions that have blown my mind, and people are just going to keep digging into the medium and figuring out what it is. And it will sort of become clear to people over time that there is amazing stuff here. I was at a party in San Francisco at some like Web3 event, and I showed somebody there I was talking about what I was working on, and I showed her the second inscription. She was very skeptical, you know, and I showed her the second inscription, which is Ryan Dahl's dick butt. And she was like, I don't know, she was like 4 and she had an accent or something. And she was like, what, you think this dick butt is art? This is a joke. This is a children's thing with... I showed it to her because I was like, yeah, this is early days, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people see something that they don't like or don't understand and think that's all that's possibly there. And I think it's already amazing and it will get even more amazing. And it'll also get very interesting as... if fees heat up, one nice thing about fees as a spam mechanism is that even if fees get very high, if you are clever with your inscriptions and you make them small in bytes and you make them very, very good and you are confident that you can sell them, you might be willing to pay very high fees in order to create those inscriptions. And so fees will make... it's so that you sort of will have to believe in yourself to make an inscription, but those who make good stuff and those who believe in themselves and are willing to pay those high fees will be rewarded. And yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, inscriptions being scarcer and cheaper than Ethereum NFTs is a very interesting property.
What do you mean by scarcer and cheaper?
Like my understanding is like, okay, so you can mint like 10,000 monkey JPEGs in a single transaction with Ethereum, right? So like,
yep.
you know, whereas with inscriptions, you're paying for like what you're putting out
every there. Monkey, every pixel of every monkey.
But like the Ethereum gas fees are like fucking insane, right? Like right now it is cheaper to make a single inscription than a single NFT on Ethereum. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, asking. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird... it's very different in like key ways that I think are really interesting to see how different it ends up being from what people have conceived of the NFT market or NFTs being. Like inscriptions versus NFTs is, I think, a very different game.
Very much so. Yeah. An NFT on Ethereum is an ERC-721 contract, and you must make a Ethereum transaction that includes the compiled code of that contract to create it. But once you create that one contract, it may define any number of NFTs in that contract. So in a single transaction, you could mint an effectively infinite number of NFTs using, well, I mean, there's some very weird caveats there, but essentially, you could do a single Ethereum transaction that minted an NFT where the content of each NFT was a number, and that number would be very, very large. And that's because the contract doesn't have to actually store every byte of every piece of content in that contract. It can generate it on the fly, or it can also point to content on IPFS. And this is, you know, a potential benefit of Ethereum NFTs, that the content can be off-chain and thus is not scarce. So this is not the case with inscriptions. To make an inscription, you must do a Bitcoin transaction, which is very similar to Ethereum. And in the future, we may make it so that we want to make it so that you are able to create multiple inscriptions in a single transaction. But the content for those inscriptions must live on the Bitcoin blockchain. And so you must be able to pay every inscription you make. You must pay for every byte of every piece of all the content that you want in that inscription. And so that makes inscriptions inherently scarcer than Ethereum NFTs. I actually think that this is pretty hard to argue against, that there is an inherent scarcity. So that's great from a value perspective, whatever. Scarcity is good for value. But I think the costliness is actually the far more interesting thing, in that if you want to make an inscription, you really kind of have to believe in it. You have to it has to be valuable enough to you that it's worth it for you to make it, even if you don't sell it. Or if your goal is to sell it, you must believe that it will fetch a higher price than the price to mint. And I think that has already led to a high quality bar for current inscriptions. I've seen lots of original pixel art. I've seen very clever uses of inscriptions, very meta inscriptions. The first parser written by somebody other than me for inscriptions, by a guy named Otto, was published as an inscription. He wrote a Python script that can parse inscriptions and published it as inscription. So hypothetically, you could sort of bootstrap inscriptions by downloading an inscription and getting this is like amazing stuff. I've seen really cool programmer art. I've seen people publishing political content. I saw a Taiwanese flag. And I just want to interject that Taiwan is indeed number one. I saw somebody post something about, I believe they posted the Hong Kong flag. There's a number of other political tweets. There's a salience. There's a signal, even in these early days, which is impressive. And I think it comes from the costliness of inscriptions, that if you see something on the time chain, somebody like valued it in a certain way. And you know that from the fees. They didn't just send tweet.
Right. I think it's also, it is very fun. I think it's like unique and different and new. And I mean, I've seen a lot of people say that it's bringing a fun to Bitcoin that hasn't been there in a while. And I mean, I feel like that's been kind of like our goal for a long time.
Right. Yeah. We you know? I mean, we just always talk about this as like a vibes based podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, we're serious about it. Like, I think Bitcoin has really been starved for fun. I think that because, you know, shit coins or not, there has been a lot of fun to be had on other chains. Degenning is fun. Shitcoining is fun. Trading NFTs is fun. And regardless of whether or not those things are good or bad, other cryptocurrencies have gotten huge user bases and huge followings by allowing people to do those things on those cryptocurrencies.
People just want to have fun on the computer.
Exactly. That's why everybody who really is into computers is into computers. I mean, I remember having my first computer, not really my computer. My mom is a novelist, and she had a very early days. She had a Mac Plus, I think, the really old black and white Mac. And I just remember being entranced by that thing. I mean, that is, to me, that is what computers are about. And being, you know, obsessed with computers, like always. And I didn't even really like play games. I mean, I did play games. I definitely played a lot of games, don't get me wrong, but I also did a lot of other weird stuff. I would make like weird art. I had a Mac, and so I didn't learn to program until relatively late. I didn't learn to really program until I was like 21. And so I would just, you know, get into the resource fork of different files and like poke around and like edit things and explore the internet, explore early bulletin board systems, like the Temple of the Screaming Electron in Walnut Creek, these like very Cult of the Dead Cow text files, these all like sort of early experiences that were just about like fun and being entranced by what this strange box
I would
could do.
Download high res images of celebrities without makeup. And then I would go on Photoshop and try to see if I could Photoshop to make them look good without notice, like how far I could take it before you would realize it was a Photoshop.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that fucked up?
No,
that was like me on the internet, like at like age 8 and 9. Like, yeah. I would like high res paparazzi image of like Nicole Kidman, like looking like terrible. Uh-huh. And then I would like try to like see if I could Photoshop it to a convincing level that like someone could release it and be like, wow, even in this like moment of like paparazzi, like she's caught off guard. She still looks so beautiful.
What was your goal with that? What were you kind
of
thinking?
I don't know. I think I just, because the thing is, I didn't really do them on my own photos. Although now if I'm ever like, you know, wanting or needing to like retouch a photo, obviously like that's a locked away skill that I'm very good at.
Well, that's the thing, is that like a lot of people wind up being good at computers because they got into something just weird and idiosyncratic and random, and then they learned all these useful skills.
Maybe I should make inscriptions out of my
you should
Photoshop.
Absolutely. You should absolutely make it. Yes, 100%. 4 megabyte touched up Nicole Kidman full block inscription.
That's how they'll
remember
$10 million
at Sotheby's. Let's go. Let's bring it.
Yeah, I do also, well, I wanted to admit this on the podcast. I did try to stir up drama about Ordinal's inscriptions on 4chan.
Okay.
It didn't work. I
you know, the Ordinal's Foundation board of directors is on 4chan. So they're already big supporters there.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like a psyop doing it. I was like, they don't know, you know. But I, because I've enjoyed sort of figuring out ways to find discourse that's happening around Ordinal's inscriptions that's not like directly adding you.
Uh-huh.
Like finding ways to like find what are people talking about in like the corners of the internet where they think like Casey can't see, or like people can, you know what I mean?
I see everything.
Well, apparently not this.
No, I don't see anything. It's gone. I can't see.
Yeah,
I
you
see,
can't see anything.
I don't even
point.
See it when people at
but
me.
I can.
Twitter is like just this like fire hose. Like you see a tweet in front of you and you're like, I'm going to respond to this now or I'm never going to see it again. Like, and that's it.
Yeah, I found good ways.
Wait, so what did you post on 4chan?
So there's a thread. Someone could probably find it. If it's still active, then it might still be active. And if it's not, then it's like archived on Biz.
What's Biz?
You don't know, like, what the, do you not know how 4chan works?
I mean, I know that 4chan is an anonymous image board. I know that threads are only, that's the CNN. Listen. I'm Eskimo cousins with Moot, okay? I have some cred.
I'm sure you want to admit that.
Anyways, so 4chan is an anonymous image board where after a certain period of time, the content is just no longer available, right?
Yeah.
So I know that there are these other archives. Is Biz just like an archive site where you can see old threads?
No. There's different boards on 4chan for different topics.
Oh,
so
you mean Biz? Like,
yeah,
you mean
Biz, like /BIZ.
Dude, the Biz nards are talking about.
Yeah, they had an Ordinal. Well, they actually
don't. They have more serious stuff to talk about.
No, are you kidding? They
yeah,
do
I'm
not
kidding.
Have anything.
Yeah,
No, there were a couple. There was like only one that, there was one that got like 100+ like responses. So that was kind of the one that I was trolling around on. There were other ones that like didn't get that much. But there is one that still could be active. It's called like Ordinals Will Be the Death of Bitcoin, something like that.
Okay. Was it like, wait, did you make that?
No, I didn't make it.
Okay.
I thought about making one, but then I was like, I think it's better. I got kind of nervous. I was like, what if someone can like figure
it's
out
anonymous.
That it's me?
Just don't use the same trip code or whatever it's called.
Yeah, see, I don't know that kind of stuff. So I got a little nervous. So what I did is I went on the Ordinals thread that already was happening where people were being like, oh, this is going to destroy Bitcoin, or like, oh, the Bitcoin maxis are seething, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Mostly they were just like dunking on Bitcoin maxis, like being like, ha ha ha, like I'm glad this happened to them. And then I responded and was like, I'm just kind of sussed out by this guy who made Ordinals coming out of nowhere and attacking Bitcoin. Like, what's his deal?
You're such a fucking degenerate. You are such a fucking degenerate. It like, it shocks me sometimes. Like, it really shocks me sometimes.
I thought,
like,
it was really funny. And then I told like a couple of people and they were all like, what? Like, why would you do that?
No, it's
like,
hilarious. Come on. And also, like, I think people really don't understand, like, which I did not understand this. When Ordinals went, before I had gotten any kind of attention, I don't know. Sometimes I'd make something that like people would, but nothing anybody ever cared about, you know? And so I would really see like haters out there on about other things, you know, like that I wasn't involved with. And I would be like, oh man, that must really suck for the person who made it, blah, 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 blah. And at first, before I saw the first like mean things about Ordinals on Twitter, I was like sad. I was like, oh, that feels bad. And then I was like, I think the real one was when Adam Back tweeted about how, you know, inscriptions were bad or miners should. Adam Back tweeted that miners should censor ordinals, which not only is a bad idea, is a not gonna work because miners love ordinals.
Yeah, there's no reason for miners to be upset about this.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it's sort of encouraging this like sort of cooperation collusion with miners. It miners censoring certain things works better when there's less competition. So you're sort of encouraging there to be less competition. And Adam Back has 500,000 followers on Twitter. He has 500,000, he has 500,000 followers on Twitter. If you don't like something and you don't want people to do it, and it's free and open source software that you can download at www.github.com/KC/ORD that anybody can run on their computer, don't tell anybody about it. Just shut up. Just don't mention it.
I mean, this has been the strongest lesson for me in like all press is good press.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I've ever experienced.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, I feel like Kris Jenner and you're Kim Kardashian, like me posting on that message board trying to stir up drama about you, I felt like I was like Kris Jenner leaking Kim Kardashian's sex tape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're leaking the
Ray
sex
J.
tape. Please don't leak my sex tapes, okay? listen. The world is not ready for that.
I'll inscribe it.
Yeah, inscribe it. Oof.
Yeah, it's, I mean, really, like, I hate to even tell people this because it has ultimately been good that they don't realize this or don't, I don't mm-hmm. know what it is, but like, yeah, don't be a hater on the internet. I'm just building up the thing that you're hating on.
Yeah.
Maybe in some situations, like canceling or whatever works, but
yes.
I mean, that's not even come close. Yes. Like, there's nothing like that.
I've been being very frank with the haters and just telling them, I don't really bother responding to them, but if I talk to them, I'm just like, hey, don't mention it. Like,
yeah.
And I also told Luke Dashier, who was very anti-inscriptions because he thinks that they are a sin because they don't conform to the original.
They probably are a sin.
1970s, pre-1970s, pre-like Vatican II Travertine Mass.
Anyone who inscribes an ordinal is going to hell.
Exactly. Yeah. If you inscribe an ordinal, you are not a true sedevacantist.
Sedevacantist.
Sorry. he was like, how do we filter this from the mempool? And I just responded with telling him how to recognize inscriptions. If you want to censor inscriptions from the mempool, look for op false, op if. That will get all of them. If you want to further censor them, but you maybe want to allow people to use that same construction, look for op false, op if, and then the ASCII, a data push containing the ASCII characters, ORD, that will let you fully censor them from your mempool. Of course, you know, you will get them when they are included in blocks. But, you know, hypothetically, if enough node runners do that, if enough node runners run that patch, it would be hard to... it would be hard to get inscriptions mined by miners. Now, the problem is that miners like inscriptions.
Yeah.
So this would encourage people to bypass the public mempool and send inscriptions directly to miners.
Also, how many people are now running nodes because they want to inscribe?
So many people.
You know?
Hardcore Bitcoiners have been telling me that they've helped more people set up nodes in the last like week than they ever have in the last 5 years, banging the drum about how important it is to run a full node.
People want to have fun on the computer.
Listen, you tell me I'm supposed to download this computer program and it's 500 megabytes. It takes up 500 gigs of space on my hard drive. And like, there's nothing that I particularly want to do with it. Like, my credit card works fine, but I'm supposed to think that this is like really important. Like, I think it's really important, to be clear. I think running a full node, verifying your own transactions is really important. But like, why is anybody else going to care, especially if they're not making Bitcoin transactions and, mm-hmm. and the fiat system is mostly working for them? You know, there are people for whom the fiat system is not working and they are very much incentivized to use Bitcoin. But yeah, just giving people something fun to do with their Bitcoin Ds is honestly like a fabulous result.
That's
like
beautiful.
The degens, the Pepes, the counterparty people, they're all like running full nodes. And it's awesome. Like, I love it. I absolutely love it. Like, if inscriptions are a flash in the pan, but we had this like really great debate about the witness size and SegWit and lots of people ran full nodes and there's some fun, you know, Pepes in the blockchain, that's fine. You know, like I'm cool with that, you know. Obviously, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be much more, but it's already been worth it is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
Just people running full nodes, just people using it, just people talking about it, having these good discussions. There's so much to say about this. Like, it's been crazy to see all these like haven't Bitcoin maxis been calling Bitcoin uncensorable money, decentralized, uncensorable, permissionless money for a long time. And now they're surprised and upset when people put arbitrary data into it. Like, I mean, I don't think they understand that there's no inherent magical way for a computer to tell the difference between some bytes and some other bytes. Mm-hmm. So if you really think that Bitcoin is decentralized, you should not be surprised about this and see it as a sign that it actually is decentralized and uncensored.
I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are just sort of interested in the moral purity of it.
Right.
And they don't like, I mean, they don't frankly want the shitcoiners to learn the error of their ways.
Right. Right.
You know, they prefer being holier than thou.
That's right. These are people who think that that Bitcoin, that there's this purity test and you pass it or fail it, or once a shitcoiner, always a shitcoiner. I don't care why people use Bitcoin. I do not give a shit. If they want to use it for dumb ass shit, awesome. The more people who use Bitcoin, like, the more fucked the government is, and it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, obviously using it as in a more sovereign way is better than in a less sovereign way. But honestly, the more people demand Bitcoin the asset, the stronger Bitcoin is. And this, I mean, so what Bitcoin does is it removes the exorbitant privilege of nation states to print money, collect taxes, and issue debt.
Go off, King.
And this and this is the core mission of Bitcoin. And if you think that nations will fight illicit content, illicit JPEGs on Bitcoin, and that is somehow a threat to the Bitcoin network because they will successfully be able to get people to shut down nodes. First off, legally, this argument is laughable. And secondly, this is not really a threat to their power. This is simply not a threat to their power. The threat to their power, I mean, to some extent it is. It's a threat to the power of the CCP to censor certain things. But the real threat to Bitcoin, to the state's power, is Bitcoin removing this exorbitant privilege and making them, forcing them to just bend the fucking knee, all right, on the issue of money printing. And if you think that somehow this will make them more upset or give them more of a reason to go after than removing one of the core crutches of power that they lean on in Bitcoin the asset, like, you're deeply confused.
Yeah, I think it's and this is also just sort of a product of, I think, discourse happening on Twitter. Again, it's like, it's just kind of making me be meta about, like, discourse around topics in general, because, you know, if you look at Dennis Porteau, is that his name?
Yeah, Porteau. Shout out to him. He wrote one of the early articles that helped things start pop off.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, if you actually were to write something as long as, like, a blog post, an article, or whatever, it kind of forces you to think through the way that you, first of all, the way that you feel about the thing, and then how you want to present that in a way that I think forces you to be more intentional than, like, Twitter kind of just encourages you to process in real time, but it doesn't really give that slack to people.
Yep.
And it's kind of just assumed that if you've said something and you're reacting in real time, that that's, you're going to have to stand by that later. Like, that's sort of the unspoken rule, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just weird to see, you know, what I think of as just being sort of like ignorant emotional responses to ordinals being put out by people with, like, huge followings. But I also think that's, like, kind of how you build. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's teaching me about the discourse cycle and kind of, like, the cynical side of it in terms of, like, some people, I think, genuinely are probably just, like, stupid, and they don't realize that by talking about ordinal inscriptions and promoting and directly adding, like, you, for example, like, that they're just bringing people to you to do whatever.
I mean, link in bio, right?
Right. Like, it's yeah, like, I think some of them maybe just don't realize that, but I have to imagine that some of them do realize that, and they're sort of just, like, cynically participating in, yes, in engagement farming and discourse, like, you know, taking advantage of the moment and the discourse.
There will be some, you know, like, I think in large part people will realize that inscriptions are fun and nobody really wants to be anti-fun. You just look stupid. Mm-hmm. I've compared inscriptions to Pokemon cards. Like, maybe you think Pokemon cards are stupid, But if you go up to a bunch of kids playing with Pokemon cards and you say Pokemon cards are stupid, and you, tiny children, are stupid for liking Pokemon cards, that makes you an asshole.
Yeah.
And that is the way that people who hate inscriptions are going to look after a certain period of time.
And I think
I did want to say, like, there will be some people who dig in and make it their shtick to hate inscriptions.
Yeah.
And they're just engagement farming. Like, good for them. You know, that's what people like on the Twitter, you know, and they'll dig in and be dumb and wrong, mm-hmm. but they'll have their shtick and their other, you know, toxic Bitcoin maxis who like that kind of content.
I think that the discourse, you're right, will eventually settle into this place of like people kind of realizing like, actually, it doesn't really matter if I like this or I don't like it. It's really not that big of a deal. And then some people will sort of like stick to their guns in a way that's just kind of whatever, not really like an educated opinion.
No, I think it will be educated, and they'll be like, oh, like we can form this weird, like, you know, contrarian little sect that like retweets each other and likes each other and, you know, whatever.
Well, I think like, I agree. I think that will still exist, but I think a lot of the outrage, like it's, I think people don't, they maybe think that this is like a, you know, move fast and break things, like kind of like techie approach, like being like disrupt the network, like type of vibe. But it's like, in reality, you are like a Bitcoin purist in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And I think people maybe don't realize the extent to which you've already kind of game theoried out like all of the possible issues and ways that this can go. Not saying you have thought of every infinite possibility in the world, of course, like there's no way that you could know everything, but I just think like people will reach that point and they just maybe don't realize that that point has already been reached and that that discourse has been happening on Hell Money Podcast.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. On HMP on the pod. Yeah. I've been doing my best to shill the pod when I go on other podcasts. I'm always like, on big pods, I'm like, I have a podcast that's not nearly as good at this one.
I know. I don't like that you say that. Yeah, I have gripes with the way you've been shilling.
Well, tell how do I shill?
You make me sound like a bitch. you're like my podcast host, she's going to hit me if I don't shill this podcast.
I mean, you will hit me. I am a battered man.
And then you also tell people that our podcast is worse than the one that you're on, which I think is categorically untrue. I think we're better than the Stefan Levera podcast.
No, you heard it here first. I love Stefan.
I know, but you know.
I mean, he has a great pod. It's different from ours.
I'm just saying. It's not categorically worse.
Okay, it's not categorically worse. I had a great conversation with Stefan. I really liked where that conversation turned out. I mean, like, obviously I hope Stefan, you know, comes around on inscriptions and winds up liking them. But I think it's totally fair to come to like an agree to disagree kind of thing and like be like, yeah, we can coexist on the time chain.
Well, I think it's fine to not care or have it not be for you.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You know, like
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. That's life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That being said, though, do you have beef that you feel you need to squash?
Yeah, it's not really beef. So one thing I've been realizing is that now people just like so many people are paying attention to me as a person that like, I like people have been like anything I say, people will take out of context and start like amplifying.
You speak too frivolously.
Yeah, I speak too frivolously, and I kind of don't want to stop doing that. I mean, if somebody asks me what I think, and I say, yeah, I think Ethereum's a shitcoin. Like, yeah, I'm going to tell them I think Ethereum's a shitcoin, and I can have. I'm really comfortable with my opinions and having one-on-one conversations with people individually where I explain what I mean and what I think, and. Like, so I don't really want to self-censor to the point where I can't just talk like a normal person off the cuff and like not, you know, give infinite caveats about everything.
No, of course. And also, as we've already said, all press is good press.
All press is good
like,
press.
I don't mind seeing people clip Hell Money Podcast.
Yeah.
Paint you in unfavorable ways. That's what I'd be doing on 4chan.
Yeah, that's what you would do. Be like that. Woman on the inside. So yeah, so I just said some negative things about Counterparty. You know, those negative things, I think the main problem was that I just said, oh, Counterparty's bad. and I didn't put anything in context, but I just want to say some nice things about Counterparty. So Counterparty is a very, very, very early protocol for making initially assets on Bitcoin, essentially tokens distinct from the Bitcoin token itself that you could mint on Counterparty and trade. And so Counterparty is actually, I think one problem is that when people see that something has a token, they immediately kind of lump it into this shitcoin category. Mm-hmm. And I think that is in some ways fair. I am very anti-tokens. I think tokens often make things worse. But, you know, whatever, whether this lumping of tokens into the shitcoin category is fair, it's simply a fact of life. And so one of the problems with Counterparty is that it has its own token. And this has been a problem, I think, mostly like culturally and socially. I actually think that if Counterparty hadn't launched with a token, and the token is like is not actually really necessary for Counterparty, I think that it maybe would have been much more sort of favorably received as time went on.
Well, I think this is an example of like the way that you decided to do ordinals and inscriptions is intentional. It comes from a Bitcoin maxi, Bitcoin purist perspective.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I've said this many times over the last year that I am designing this in a way that is intentionally intended to be acceptable to the Bitcoin community.
Right. And so Counterparty didn't do that.
Yeah. So, but I mean, let me just say nice things about Counterparty. So the Counterparty token was created by burning Bitcoin. Regardless of whether a token is good or bad, burning Bitcoin is one of the fairest ways to launch a token, right? Mm-hmm. And it just indicates that you're not like just minting a bunch of crap and like selling something. I mean, it has that same like proof of work scarcity to it.
Right.
Another thing is that although there are some technical details with Counterparty that are you know like hard like difficult or maybe suboptimal, Counterparty messages are all on Bitcoin. You can replay the Bitcoin blockchain from the Bitcoin Genesis block, and with the Counterparty sort of consensus rules, by looking for Counterparty messages embedded in the Bitcoin blockchain, you can recreate the entire state of Counterparty. You can see where all the assets are, et cetera. And this gives Counterparty, I think I would say, a lot of the same uncensorableness as Bitcoin, and relies on Bitcoin's proof of work. So it does have a token, but it is in some sense on Bitcoin. The messages are on Bitcoin. And I do not believe that somebody who knows a lot about Counterparty can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that the messages are actually in Bitcoin transactions and not somewhere else. This is a detail I'm curious about. When Counterparty embeds data in a Bitcoin transaction, does it link to it with a hash, or is that data in the Bitcoin transaction? So anyways, Counterparty was created in 2014, and it was originally created for assets, you know, for sort of minting these assets, and then you would trade these assets like tokens, sort of like shares of stock. But then there just was people, you know, Counterparty community members started making memes. They started making memes on Counterparty. Rare Pepe's Spells of Genesis is on Counterparty. And these are seminal early NFTs that have become, many of them have become grails.
I know some Rare Pepe owners.
Yeah, Rare Pepe. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They're bawling out of control with these things that, and now there is, I love the Counterparty community. I absolutely love the Counterparty community. And guys, you Pepes, okay? I'm not saying this because I don't want you to be mad at me. You can be mad at me. You can hate me. Whatever. That's fine. I am saying this because this is my honest opinion. They are a bunch of degenerate maniacs who are awesome and make awesome, crazy, weird shit and have a thriving community and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful memes that right now inscriptions can only aspire to the level of memery, okay, on Counterparty.
How do they feel about inscriptions?
I think aside from the like sort of not so nice things that I have said about Counterparty, they like inscriptions a lot.
You can't be blamed for shit talking the competition.
Yeah, well, I don't even want to like be like, I want it to be clear that you know, when I say on a podcast, like the thing is, you know, we weren't talking about Counterparty. So I was just talking about like prior art on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. When I say Counterparty is bad, it actually means that I have certain technical considerations that are, I believe, legitimate, that I think are ways in which Ordinals improves on Counterparty in specific ways and has issues that Counterparty doesn't and avoids issues that Counterparty has. This is not me saying that I don't like the art. It's not me saying that I don't like the community. It's not me saying that I don't like the people. They're just, you know, technical issues. So, like, you know, for example, like, I believe that if you want to create a numbered Counterparty asset, you do not need XCP, the native token. You can create, and I believe this is a relatively recent change, you can create a numbered Counterparty asset without the XCP token. However, if you wish to create a named Counterparty asset, i.e. that has a globally unique name, you must burn some XCP. So one problem is one, and every Counterparty like tradable art asset that has any value, I believe, is named. So in practice, this ability to name assets is very important. So this creates some friction for users when onboarding. They must both acquire BTC to pay fees for their transactions, their Counterparty transactions, but they must also require XCP. That, you know, if they want to mint an asset. Now they can buy an asset and like trade it later without having to pay XCP, but you know, this represents a hurdle. This is one of the reasons why I'm so anti-token, is that the UI just gets really bad. Ordinal inscriptions already have the problem that you need to acquire BTC to use them. It would be great if you didn't have to acquire Bitcoin to use them, but you know, having to acquire another token would be just a huge technical problem. You'd have to go on exchanges, you'd have to swap. It's just a mess. And you look at other projects, it's already a mess on Ethereum L2s. Like, you want to operate on an Ethereum L2 and you maybe want to send things into it or out of it or whatever, and you need that L2's token. This is like a separate token that you now need to have. And so when I say, oh, Counterparty is bad, on a podcast that's not about Counterparty, this is a shorthand for, you know, Counterparty has design choices which lead to UX problems. Not every design choice in Counterparty is bad. There's some things that Counterparty has that inscriptions do not have yet. So for example, inscriptions you cannot name an inscription with a globally unique name.
Yet
this will be coming. But I just want to apologize to the Counterparty community for coming off very negatively. I think that and I'm always willing to have one-on-one conversations with people because I think those are much more productive. But you know, in reality, my feelings about Counterparty are very positive. And also Counterparty users are some of the most like Bitcoin, like hardcore Bitcoiners there are. Mm-hmm. Like the people who are like, you know, we're gonna stay on this protocol, which is less popular than Ethereum NFTs, but it's very much a Bitcoin native protocol. Those are some of the hardcorest Bitcoiners there are. And that's why a lot of them also like inscriptions. Yeah. So yeah, Counterparty community, I hope we can consider like this beef squashed. I love you guys.
Yeah. In a sense, Counterparty and Ordinal inscriptions are both harm reduction to, you know, those that need to have their rare pepes. They need to be able to meme.
Just injecting the rare pepes into their veins, they're passed out.
Yeah, they can't
help
it.
They're under a bridge doing unspeakable things for just another rare pepe.
Yeah, at least we need to give them a way to do that on Bitcoin, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's actually another thing, is I don't think that people understand that, or maybe they do, I don't know, whatever, but NFTs are fun. If you can't do NFTs on Bitcoin, if you want to have that fun, you do that on Ethereum. And then this naturally will probably turn you into like an Ethereum bag holder, rationally or not, where you'll think Ethereum is number one and you might not ever even consider the reasons why you might be interested in Bitcoin. And so I think that, you know, frivolous things that bring people into Bitcoin still bring people into Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a true Ordinal inscriptions, Ordinal hater, and you don't like it, and first of all, my advice to you is just to ignore it, right? You can just ignore it. And then what it becomes is anyone... Like,
bro, just close the web browser.
Bro, just X out of the window.
How are inscriptions even real? Just close the browser on an ordinals.com.
But I mean, you know, if you take that approach of just being like, I don't see it, it is not there, I do not see it, then all those people have are just sats. You know, it's mm-hmm. people that maybe wouldn't have held any Bitcoin at all now just literally have sats because they are collecting what is important to them as ordinals or inscriptions.
Yep.
They just have Bitcoin in your eyes, you know, if you're a true purist.
Yeah. This is, I mean, this is kind of like why, like, you know, like I like capitalism and why, also why my arguments about capitalism are oftentimes so like unappealing, where I'm like, listen, like capitalism has flaws, but it seems better than every other alternative that we've tried. And so, like, wait, I forgot where I was going with this. Harm reduction. Oh, yeah. So I'm like, listen, yeah, that's the thing, is I think that when people imagine people using inscriptions on Bitcoin, they imagine that the alternative is those people being like Bitcoin maxis who mm-hmm. just stack sats and live on a mountaintop and get new blocks from the Blockstream satellite. And like are just like eating beef and shunning seed oils.
Right.
But that's not the reality. The alternative is that those people don't use Bitcoin at all. They're never invited to learn about it. They use other things, and those other things that give them what they want, they will feel much more positively about. They will feel possibly threatened by Bitcoin. So it's like, listen, like this alternative where everybody is a sovereign citizen is just not a reality. And this is like way better than the real alternative, which is people not learning about Bitcoin, not using Bitcoin, not having a reason to use it, feeling ambivalent or negative about it. Like, yeah, it's just...
It's really exposed a lot of the hypocrisy, the freedom style libertarian.
Yeah.
That are trying to censor.
Yeah, like listen,
these
like
people that just want to trade their pepes.
They just want to trade their pepes. And like Bitcoin is not for anything. It is not for thing A and not for thing B. Bitcoin is a system that exists, and it was indeed created with certain use cases in mind, but like absolutely everything that is, you know, not controlled by a single individual or by a single group of individual, it transcends the intentions of its original creators, and it just becomes something that exists in the world and that we essentially have to reckon with on like a from first principles basis, not on a basis of this was created for X, this was created for Y. Eventually we have to say Bitcoin is not about what Bitcoin is for. Bitcoin is about what Bitcoin is. And we have to look at what it is. And like the same thing that makes it possible to send money to the Canadian truckers is exactly the same thing that makes it possible for somebody to post a dick butt. It's the same property of Bitcoin. It's the dick butt and the Canadian truckers are two sides of the same weird coin. And I think I hope that everybody is able to come to appreciate that.
The only thing the establishment truly fears is the crypto dick butt guys.
They fucking should. They fucking should. The sooner it becomes possible, not just like if it's fun to use Bitcoin, mm-hmm. the state
fun
is
to run a node.
Fun to run a node. The state is fucked.
Yeah.
They are already on the fucking ropes, and it is going to be a fucking Pepe that delivers the fucking knockout punch.
I love to see it.
Yeah.
That being said, do you have a like call to action advice for those who want to be inscribing? They want to get in on the game?
Yeah. So actually like, okay. So yeah, many thoughts. One is that ORD is hard to use. ORD is the ordinal theory, utility and inscription and wallet and block explorer. When you go to ordinals.com, you're just talking to an instance of ORD. So you can run that yourself on your own computer. ORD is hard to run. We've worked very hard to make it easy to run, but it is difficult. You will need a full node. So first step before don't think too many steps ahead. Figure out how you can get a full node running, right? I run ORD on a laptop with a lot of RAM and a lot of disk space. So you may need to think about running it on a beefy computer. But first step is just get a Bitcoin full node running, and then you can figure out the next steps later. Then the second step is to get ORD running. Now, if you have installed Bitcoin and it's sort of running in the default way, and your computer is fast, all you need to do is type ord server. And it will, you'll see a progress bar, and the progress bar will go to 0 to, you know, 100 over the course of a few hours or a few days. I believe my laptop does it in a few hours, although I'm not sure. So don't quote me on that. But the ease of use is actually already very good, because a lot of other things, you know, for example, Ord will figure out where your Bitcoin data dir is, where your Bitcoin RPC cookie file is, what port Bitcoin D is likely to be serving RPC requests on, and it'll auto-configure all that yourself. Now, if you're running Ord and Bitcoin D on a different user, or you have a non-default setup or whatever, that is a different consideration. But Ord, as far as weird command line tools go, is already very easy to use. But I do acknowledge that it is not easy if you don't have experience with this and you don't have a powerful enough computer. But yeah, so I would say don't get frustrated. That's my first step. Don't get frustrated. This is hard, and we know it's hard, and we're trying to make it better. I think the first big thing is that we had to disable an optimization for sync time that was making it, this optimization makes it much faster, but we had to disable it for boring technical reasons. We're going to try to re-enable that optimization. That should be a nice boost to the speed of the speed required to sync your ORD index.
Sometimes you have to do hard things if you want to put your JPEGs on the blockchain.
Yeah, that's right. And also, this is a certain somebody has referred to this as natural selection. So if you are out there and you're inscribed, somebody copied Clipart rocks from Ethereum and made a collection out of them. One of the first collections on ordinals, on one of the first collections of inscriptions, and they are making a mint. So if you are able to get through this hurdle, like, you will be well rewarded. You're still so early. Everything below inscription like 100,000 is incredibly early. Everything below inscription 1 million is still pretty early. Yeah, so and so I'd say just don't give up, and also just don't make grand plans and let that stop you from doing something. Just make something dumb and see how it goes, and then just ramp up slowly, you know, like, do one thing, see how it works, do a little bit more complicated. I think one problem that people have is they get way too complicated way too quick, and that stops them from doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. Right? If the rock man had been like, no, I'm gonna, like, you know, hire French artists to make the most beautiful rocks on the history of the planet, he wouldn't have been able to launch so quickly. And so, you know, launch and iterate. The other thing that I would suggest is I would really love to see technical people teaming up with artists. If you're kind of a technical person, you know how to run command line tools, and but you don't know what content to make, find a friend who's an artist, go halvesies on any inscriptions you make, and, like, team up. And I think that would be great. I would love that.
I tried to do that, but he's useless.
Listen, who, like, and this is not,
I have things that I need to put on the blockchain. Find a techie to do it.
Yeah,
for me.
And this is not me that she's sub tweeting right now.
You know who you are.
Yeah. But find, like, I love this idea of friends teaming up to, like, pool their skills, because right now it's not about money, it's just about skills. You know, the transaction fees are cheap, you know, whatever, you can do things at one sat per V byte, they'll get in eventually right now. So that's my advice for that. We know the features that people want. The most important features that people want, we believe, are provenance. So they can create collections that everybody can view, like, what inscriptions are in a single collection, and trustless offers to make trading more efficient. Be careful of getting scammed. There's already crazy markets. People are trading inscriptions for one Bitcoin each, which is, like, insane.
It's fucking insane.
Can't fucking believe it. But the thing is that there's been so much degeneracy in the NFT space for so long, and I say that with really positive, like, I love degeneracy. There's been so much degeneracy, the degens are ready to go. The NFT degens are, like, they see, like, they go into the Discord, they read, like, these are NFTs, these are on Bitcoin, whatever, and they're like, okay, sell me a rock for one Bitcoin. Like, they're fully informed consumers. They're like, let's fucking go. So that's why this has been happening so quickly. So they want trusted offers. We have a way of doing trusted offers trustless offers where you create this partially signed Bitcoin transaction that kind of can only be accepted by, you just partially signed Bitcoin transaction that transfers an inscription for some Bitcoin, and that will be an elegant way to make trading easier and simpler. So those are our top two features: provenance and and offers. Now, unfortunately, there are changes that we need to make behind the scenes to the Ordinals Index to support future features. So there's going to be some invisible work that we have to do to make things better and more seamless in the future before we can launch these really cool features. And I honestly, I'm so excited about the way that we're going to do provenance and collections. I think it's going to blow people's minds. And I think there's going to be so much creativity just in making use of that feature and the way that it works that I'm incredibly excited. When I talk about specific features of inscriptions, I feel like fucking Steve Jobs, where I'm like, look at these fucking icons. Like, they look like candy. You're going to want to fucking eat them. You're going to want to lick the screen. You are going to want to lick your fucking inscriptions because they look so fucking good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Call to action.
Call to action.
If I've ever heard yeah. one.
And then I have some specific advice for people making inscription content. So inscriptions are a new medium. Everybody's figuring out what looks good, what doesn't, how to do them. So some important things that I would like to advise people based on sort of kind of things that people I've seen people do. Inscriptions are presented on the ordinals.com website over a dark gray background. And they might be, that background color might change, and other people might preview inscriptions over other background colors. So your inscription needs to be designed to look good on any background color. So, you know, if you have a dark image, you shouldn't have like little white corners. If it's a PNG, you should make those corners transparent. I saw this on a Black Lotus Magic the Gathering inscription. Make sure those corners are transparent, or give the whole inscription a particular background color that you know that the content looks good on. That's one advice. Or yeah, well, more. So SVG and HTML, those are also presented without a particular background color. So that means that you can do, if you don't give your SVG or HTML content, it will be transparent and it must look good over every background color. So again, make sure that your SVG HTML inscriptions have a particular background color or are designed intentionally to look good over any background color. And now this applies for just HTML and SVG inscriptions. HTML and SVG inscriptions must be prepared to render at any size. They render as thumbnails in many places on ordinals.com, but they also render at a larger size on the slash inscription page, and then an even larger size full browser window if somebody goes to slash content or slash preview. And so that means that when you make an HTML inscription or SVG inscription, preview it in a browser, and even best is to preview it on Signet or on RegTest locally, which are local ways that you can preview an ordinals.com block explorer. They're very fast, very easy to set up. Preview it there first, make sure it looks good, and look at it how it looks at different sizes. You want to make something that looks good at all different sizes. I've seen awesome inscriptions where if you click to the full screen image, they look really good. But on the like preview page, you can just see the like upper left hand corner of the image. Somebody posted an awesome SVG, but on the preview page and even on the slash inscription page, all you can see is on the is the upper left hand corner. And so you can do that by designing your SVGs carefully to be resolution independent. For ideas on how to do this for SVGs, you know, go to the ordinals.com clock. ordinals.com/clock or localhost/clock if you're running the Ordinals Block Explorer locally. And you can look in the SVG for that. That SVG is very carefully designed to be essentially resolution independent. And you can do that with HTML as well. And then furthermore, images can often be compressed and still have very good quality. So look for tools like TinyPNG. TinyPNG is just a website that will compress your PNG. I don't know if it's lossy or lossless. I think it might palletize images, which might lead to some loss of fidelity, but they look very good. And so definitely think about, and also if you don't need a lossless image, if you're not really doing pixel art, look into JPEG or WebP. Those formats are both supported for images that can be lossy. In the future, ordinals.com, the Ordinals Block Explorer, I keep saying ordinals.com, but the Ordinals Block Explorer, which you can run locally, which is Ord. In the future, that might use pixelated rendering for PNGs, which is what it currently does for all images, and non-pixelated rendering for non-PNGs. With the idea that if you're doing pixel art, every like pixel matters, and so you don't want JPEG, you don't want lossy artifacts like you see on JPEG. And so that means that in the future, we might stop rendering non-PNGs with pixelated rendering. this isn't decided. This kind of depends on whether this is like a net win or not. But so think about, if you're doing pixel art, use PNGs. And if you're not doing pixel art, use JPEGs or WebP, whatever is best. Let's see. I think that's it. Is there anything else that I'm forgetting?
No, I think you've pretty much got it.
Okay. Yeah. And this is a new medium. And get in the Discord. Get in the Ordinals Discord and like get talking. There's an Artificers channel for other people who are making inscriptions. I should probably change that channel name to Inscribers, because nobody knows what an artificer is. It is somebody who makes...
You love making up your stupid little words, don't you?
This has been the best part of the whole project, is that now serious adults must use the dumb fucking words that I have made up. The haters must say these dumb words. They must come out of their mouth. People are inscribing their inscriptions, their digital artifacts on the time chain. They're artificers. They're rare and exotic sats. Deal with it, okay? Deal with it.
Ordinals.
Yeah. But yeah, like so for artificers out there, get in the Discord. Start sharing knowledge. One thing that I want to do is start making little guides and tips. I haven't been able to do that because I've been so busy.
Swamped
on taking it in from every angle. So help each other, you know, and as the community evolves, as sort of general knowledge about this new medium evolves, I think a lot of these things will become well known. Call to action. If anybody wants to make an SVG, some sort of examples of best practices or a guide with like, here's a PNG, here's a good way to make a PNG, here's what to think about, here's how to make HTML, here's the CSS to make it size independent, same for an SVG. Awesome contribution. I'm super slow linking to everything. I'm trying to link to all the content, all the great content that people make. Shout out to Bitcoin Gandalf, I think. I think you can go to inscriptions or ordinals.wtf and he put together some stuff.
Yeah, he was a very, I feel like that processing in real time, documented on Twitter, was a very genuine,
yeah,
and like open-minded, for sure, good, yeah, version, yeah, of it.
My, you know, this is not a company. This is just me. Some Cointelegraph article who was talking about the first butthole that appeared, a very famous butthole that was posted to
of our human history, frankly.
Yeah. So the first shock content on Ordinals, the first shock inscription was the Goatsy butthole, which was described by a lovely Cointelegraph reporter as a man manipulating his anus. I'm actually really pleased that it was that like internet classic. Mm-hmm. It's a classic shock image that people troll each other with. I had to censor it on the ordinals.com Explorer because it was just on the front page. People find it unpleasant. I didn't want them to see it. Once we figure out a way to uncensor it, it will be possible to go to that page directly and see the butthole if that is what you so desire. But they may eventually become kind of grails, like these early buttholes.
I think there's so.
Three or fours.
It's like a fertility statue.
Is it?
Hey, to
are
each
we
their
sure
own.
About that? Yeah, I guess so, man. But he said, like, yeah, Casey is just like vibing and building things with his friends. That's really true right now. I don't know if I'm never going to raise money, but I haven't so far. I'm accepting donations, and those are personal donations to me, not the project, because there is no project. It's me with my board of directors on 4chan and Discord, yep, trying to figure this out as we go along. And I really hope that people can support each other. My intention with this is 100% to make a thriving community and open ecosystem. And I hope that's reflected in what my development priorities have been. I have not made a slick mobile wallet or trusted exchange, and that's not even on my radar right now. I've made hard-to-use tools that are the best I can make them, but which are fully open source, fully decentralized, fully anybody can run, because I actually think that it's important to deliver that before any sort of slick, you know, light client or mobile wallet or whatever that I might want to do in the future. Like, there needs to be that core group of people who can actually, like, you know, use it trustlessly. I forgot where I was going with this. I think I said it, you know. Yeah,
I mean, I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
I am. I actually, when we had Max Webster on the podcast like months and months ago over the summer,
shout out to Max, early
shout out to Max,
early Ordinals degen.
Yeah. he asked us what we were both bullish on, and you like gave all these answers of like projects that you thought were cool, and I just said I'm bullish on Casey, and I still mean it.
I really appreciate that. Like I couldn't have honestly, I would have given up on this if my friends weren't so enthusiastic about it. People like you, people like Mark Goodwin, people like I don't know if the Hux wants me to dox her, but people like the Hux. People like randos, like XC Pinata, who I met at, not randos, I love XC Pinata, but I met, you know, at Bitcoin Miami 2022, I talked to, some people, including XC Pinata. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but he was like, this is cool. Like, I want this, you know? I talked to the Scarce City guys. They were like, I don't know, but like they were into it too.
PlebLab's been very supportive.
PlebLab's, yeah. And like my friends, like,
Isabel's out there fucking fighting Isabel's battles out there. For you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Isabel Fox and Duke. She's part of the board of directors on 4chan. She's my media handler. You know, so just all these people who have just been supporting me. Mark Goodwin, like honestly, like a make or break moment was at Bitcoin Miami 2022. And I knew that I would have to make a wallet. And making a wallet has always been terrifying to me because you're holding people's actual Bitcoin. You're holding people's actual private keys. And this was a big step up in the seriousness of the project and like sort of, you know, how hard I had to work. And I was thinking, you know, maybe I should just shit can this whole thing. Like I have to make this wallet. Like this is going to be hard. I'm going to have to sign messages. Like that's bad. I'm going to have to actually construct these transactions. And Mark Goodwin, like, I think he coined the term ordinal theory, and he just fucking gassed me up. And I was like, fuck yes, this is cool. Like, I should do this. So, like, I would have given up if my friends and other people who knew about this, like people like Wildman, people like Rare Pepe Maximalist, and people who've come along recently, like CB Spears, who's been modding the Discord, and like just people. Yeah, so just... thank you from the bottom of my heart. Sorry. Yeah, it really makes me emotional to think about like the support that I've gotten.
Aww, we love you.
Thanks.
Well, this has been a productive session, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I feel like I've really gotten a lot out. Like, really a lot out. Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything else that we need to say today?
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess until next time.
Yeah, see you guys next session.
Bye.